Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome, one and all, to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. We're live on Facebook using Zoom this show. We had a great guest that we're going to introduce to you in just a second. You can already see her there waiting in the wings. There's no secrets there. Yeah, we have a great guest today. Jen Eggert is joining us because in these episodes, we wanted to make sure that we were targeting the emotional side of FSHD. And then that third episode of each month, we tackle the physical side with Mitch and Bill, and that'll be next week. So I'm hoping that you all can join us then. But today is kind of the mindfulness side, the emotional side. Some might even say, dealing with it even more so that way, they deal with it that way more in the emotional side. For me, I'm one of those people, and I think the physical does fuel it, but it's the unknown, it's the uncertainty, it's the fear, it was the dealing with the diagnosis, the whole story. So we'll have Jen, you can go ahead and unmute your mic. We really want to get her involved here. Before we start introducing Jen real quick, though, if you guys want to comment, don't let me forget to add that in. You can. For the Facebook watchers, listeners, use that chat room. It's a huge advantage to ask the questions now where you kind of get a little bit more of a one-on-one with Jen. If you have questions for myself, obviously, I can answer them too, but this is really for the expert in the room, and that is Jen Eggert. Welcome, Jen. Thanks for being here. I appreciate your time and hanging out with us.
I am really happy to be here. I was just pulling up the Facebook so I could
see right? the
comments as well, but it's a little, I don't want to look at it and look at you. Oh, there's Sue Drescher. Hi.
Yeah.
Hi, Sue.
Yes. Yeah. Sue's in there.
It is
a little bit, it kind of screws with your mind a little bit. Cause if you watch when we do it on Zoom and then you watch the broadcast off the Facebook next to you or something, which is what I do too, off my tablet, it is, delayed. So it's like, right. Oh, that's what
half
I look like.
Hour. It's
seconds
like a half
ago.
Minute.
Yeah. So for those that don't know who you are, who might just be listening for the first time or watching for the first time, I know you've been a featured guest on this show. You've been very active in the FSHD Society, been a part of a lot of their events as well. But for those that don't know who you are, why don't we take a little bit of time in the beginning here to introduce yourself a little bit of your background.
Thank you. First, Tim, thanks for inviting me on again. I always love talking to you. We always have these great conversations. So I'm grateful to be here, especially in this crazy time since the world has changed dramatically for all of us. My name is Jennifer Eggert. I am a psychologist. I live in New York City. I have FSHD. I come from a family with several people with FSHD. It's interesting that, I guess probably because I came from this family, when I went to graduate school to study to be a psychologist, I made the choice to work with people who had medical illness and disability. And this was before my own diagnosis of FSHD. And so much of my background is how is it that we live with changes in our bodies, whether it's from a diagnosis of cancer or a disability or FSHD, and how do we move through life with these challenges? And as I've been working with, trying to figure that stuff out on my own, I came to mindfulness practice, which is it's like a way of being. It comes, the roots are in Buddhist tradition and Buddhist practice. of meditation, present moment awareness, a way of relating to our experience in life. And as I started my own practice, actually after September 11th, living in New York City and really looking for something to help me with tremendous anxiety and fear, like everybody living in New York and in other places were experienced. You know, I found it, and as I started practicing, started working with people in a different way, because I started realizing that, you know, maybe I needed to find a little more peace with the fact that things happen in life sometimes that we can't control. So I've been studying and practicing mindfulness and teaching mindfulness for a while now. I started my own practice in 2002 and got trained at the Center for Mindfulness in UMass. And I think the first training I did was in 2007. And then I've done other trainings over time. So that's a big focus of how I think about things, how I live my own life. Completely imperfectly, I just want to say, like, I think people get this impression, like people who meditate have it all figured out. I don't want to promote that illusion, but it is a practice and a way of being that I find very helpful.
Yeah, you bring up meditation, and I was one of those people that thought, you know, how hokey. You're just going to sit there and think for a minute, and that's going to make it all better. And cynical, you know, and this was before FSHD diagnosis. And my brother is very much into mindfulness. He's very much into, you know, that kind of practice and preaching it, including other forms of therapies that aren't just, hey, pop a pill, you'll feel better. You know, if he thinks that, you know, aromatherapy may help, he might suggest that to people, even quiet music or something like that. So I always look at him and go, you mean, him were like polar opposites in that way. I'm like, ah, whatever, man, that's just hokey, you know? But now as I get older and dealing with more stuff, and that's one of his words, you know, dealing with your stuff, and you got to say it like that. You got to have some tools in your tool chest, you know, and you got to start opening your mind to the possibility that things could be better. And when you use the term practice, you know, practice, it is the truth. Like, you have to do it often. Some type of routine. Would you agree when it comes to meditation?
Yeah. You know, I think we have to think about, one way to think about, like, our emotional reactions are that it's like a habit of mind. You know, there's a lot of neurobiological research out there right now, and that is demonstrates that, you know, when we have habitual ways of responding to stress, you know, and people do it different ways. You know, some people go and get a drink. Some people go and run a half marathon. Some people get into a habit of thinking of maybe self-criticism, maybe intense fear, but a lot of rumination, everything's gonna, you know, fall apart. And all that. That these are habits that, like anything, become these automatic patterns and ways of responding. So when you talk about practice, what we're really doing is brain training. We're retraining these habitual ways in which our mind and our body respond to stress, to difficulty. And really coming back to something like, you know, what is mindfulness? Mindfulness is, like, according to Jon Kabat-Zinn, who is considered like the father of, like, Western secular mindfulness movement and founded the Center for Mindfulness at UMass Medical Center. He defines it as paying attention on purpose to the present moment, to whatever's here right now, with openness, with acceptance, with non-judgment. And that last piece is really the kicker, because what is really, he's really saying there is, how is it do we meet all of our experiences of life, whether it's a moment of joy or a moment of sadness or a moment of fear and anxiety? or a moment of complete boredom. Hmm. And how do we meet it with like this curiosity? Like, this is a human experience to be sad.
Yeah.
It's a human experience to be overwhelmed. It's a human experience to experience joy. Hmm. And how do we meet these experiences without these habitual responses? Joy is good. I want more of it. I want to hold on to it. I never want it to go away. And inevitably it does. Everything moves and changes. Or this is fear. I don't like it. It feels uncomfortable. I need to do everything in my power to change it, push it away, avoid it. Mm-hmm. And then we get into this sort of tug of war with our experience, which is just reality. So we're in this tug of war of reality because we don't want certain things. We want to hold on other things. And then we're in this fight. So what we do in mindfulness practice is we pay attention to what comes to us. So if it's a meditation practice, and there's many forms of mindfulness, lots of different ways to practice. But in meditation, we may have a thought that comes to us. So we notice the thought. And then we bring our attention back to our breathing, or we bring our attention to sound, if that's what we're paying attention to, or the body, if we're paying attention to the body. And we're training our mind that in the face of a distressing thought, a happy thought, a boring thought, an uncomfortable sensation in the body, a good sensation in the body, we're training ourselves how to just notice our experience. And then we choose where to place our attention. So it's really a way of training ourselves to relate to our experience in a different way and have a little more control over how it is we respond to these things, which are going to happen because that's life.
We're talking with Jennifer Eggert and talking about the mindfulness and the emotional side, really, of FSHD. And kind of the theme, yeah, is understanding and, you know, kind of living with the emotions, I think, that all kind of wrap around this. And Jennifer's been talking to us about, you know, using mindfulness practice, meditation, many, 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 many forms, she says, that there is. And, but like for me, man, it's like, I think I've always had an issue with anxiety, and forgive me those that are listening, but I'm going to selfishly, you know, ask some things that I deal with, and maybe it relates to what you guys have, respond to some questions in your worlds, and maybe we can kind of, you know, have you comment as well, which you can, of course. But I always dealt with, you know, anxiety as a younger person, not really knowing what it was. People just say, oh, you worry too much. You're too uptight, you know?
Yeah.
And it just always seemed like if something good was happening, so you mentioned, you know, acknowledging that if you're experiencing joy, you don't want to let it go. Where if I would experience joyful things, I would say, well, this will be short-lived.
Yeah.
You know, and like, this is not gonna last forever. So, you know, it's, I almost don't want to enjoy it because it's just gonna hurt more when it's over.
Right. And then what does that do to your experience of joy?
It shortens it.
Yeah.
It shortens it because it's always being followed by the feeling of dread, or the replacement of joy is, you know, fear or disappointment or something bad happening, you know?
Right.
So, you know, I use it like, okay, you're having a great time with your young kids on a family vacation or something. You're on a beach or whatever. Oh, this is awesome. End of the day, someone gets sick. It's like, oh, well, there goes that. Of
right,
course,
like it,
of
I'm
course.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and so, and I think that even using sickness as a example is obviously very, very poignant in what we're all dealing with now in one of the issues of our world is that, you know, so, and of course having FSHD, not just the COVID-19 issue, but having FSHD, you know, living your life just to whatever you believed was your functionality of normal. And then boom, you're diagnosed with this thing that puts a label on why you can't, or why it's harder, or why it's more difficult. And that to me is very interesting, you know, the fact that like nothing really changed. Like, you're still the same person, but now you got told this news and now you're different. But yet you're not different. you know, you always did have FSHD. So that was weird for me to kind of, when I went in the doctor's office and when I left, I physically was the same. Everything was the same. But emotionally, I was starting to become completely different.
Yeah. You know, there's so much in everything that you've just said. And there's, you know, we could talk for hours about that.
Yeah.
Because what you are talking about, I'm sure that there are so many people that are listening right now that can completely relate. I can completely relate as someone who also struggles with anxiety and depression. I can relate to that too. Mm-hmm. I love the example that you gave first to go back to this thing about joy. Yeah. And how this, because what you're describing is exactly what we're talking about when we talk about mindfulness practice, that it's not even a matter of, you know, we do it because we want to manage our uncomfortable emotions. But we also practice because, and even perhaps more importantly, because it helps us be present to our lives more fully. Mm-hmm. So that when we experience joy, we're not already in the loss of it while it's happening. Mm. That when we're experiencing joy, you know, it's funny, I'm writing an article right now for the FSHD Watch for the newsletter on mindfulness. I'm in the process right now. I'm finishing it and just writing about this exact issue. It's like, how is it that we just become, you know, it's about living fully our lives as human beings fully in the moment. So when we say paying attention to the present moment with this openness, that includes moments of joy. So in the practice, we experience life more fully, which includes the joy, and it includes the difficulty, and it includes a lot of the boring stuff in between, which maybe isn't even so boring when we actually start being present to our lives and not like, oh, I don't like this, where can I be, and I'm starting to plan everything else. That when we actually stop for a moment, maybe it's not as boring as we think it is. So because we're actually paying attention.
Yeah.
Attention to right. the moment. So it's about not just managing stress and anxiety. It's sort of one small component. It's about living more fully. The whole, like Jon Kabat-Zinn's book, his first, I think it was his first book, one of his first books was Full Catastrophe Living. So the idea we're living the full catastrophe of life, whatever it is that is in front of us, that we're living that which I think was a Zorba the Greek quote, that you're living the full catastrophe of life, all the joy, all the passion, all the fear and sadness and everything in between. But the second piece I'd like to comment on about what you're saying is, because I think it's very powerful what you're saying here, and I'm sure that we can all relate to this, that you have this moment where you're one person and then there's a diagnosis. You're still the same person, but you feel like something has fundamentally changed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And here it is where we get into thought and what it is that we tell ourselves about our experiences in life. You know, in cognitive behavioral therapy, there's this sort of classic example of, you know, you see somebody walking down the street that you know, an acquaintance, and you say hello to them, and they seemingly look at you, and then they don't say hello back, and they keep walking by. Mm-hmm. There's so many different ways that we can interpret that. Hmm. You know, if we think about, you can interpret that by saying, oh, I did something wrong. What did I do wrong? They're mad at me.
Right.
Which will make us feel anxious, worried. Or, oh, they don't like me. They were ignoring me because they don't like me, which might make us feel sad or depressed or lonely. We could say, gosh, I wonder what's going on with them. They didn't even notice that I was there. They're all caught up in their thought.
Right.
And if we think about it in that way, maybe we might experience some concern from them, but we sure wouldn't be depressed or lonely, and we wouldn't be feeling anxious like we did something wrong. Or we might say, how ridiculous is that? I can't wait to call them later. They're such a space cadet.
Yeah.
And then we might feel amused. the situation hasn't changed. The situation is that someone's walking down the street and either they saw you or didn't see you. But what is different is what it is we tell ourselves. And what it is we tell ourselves can have a direct impact on how it is we feel. And it can have a direct impact on behavior. We could be like, they don't like us anymore. And when they call us, we ignore the phone message and we don't talk to them because we're afraid or we're nervous about them telling us something. And it might not even have any basis in reality. So we start behaving in ways that are consistent with what we're telling ourselves. Now, getting a diagnosis with FSHD, I mean, I'm not saying it's the same thing as someone walking down the street, you know, but on the other hand, there's many ways to meet that. There's many ways that we can approach what it is we tell ourselves about what this means about who we are, about what our past was, what our present is, what our future is, what the implications are for relationships and all sorts of things. And what it is we tell ourselves can have a really direct impact on how it is we move through this disease. You know, mindfulness practice enables us to see the thoughts without, you know, reacting to them. Or we see them, we react to them, and then we learn. You know, it's not like, you know, this is, none of this is perfect. You know, we're, you know, we learn, we practice. But this is the heart of it. What is it? How is it that I interpret? What are the lenses through which I view my life, including FSHD, including COVID, including all of the changes that have happened to each and every one of our lives as a result of what's happening in the world, in our country? Yeah. And this isn't about being Pollyanna either. It's not about, like, you know, putting a rosy sunshine.
Yeah. Yeah.
This stuff's hard. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. And how do we meet it with compassion? Like, you know, and acknowledge, this is really hard.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time. And I acknowledge it. I don't try to push it away. And I meet it with kindness and compassion for my very human self that is going through this.
Yeah, there's, I think you made a lot of phenomenal points there. And I think what I keyed in on was, you know, when I call it like storytelling in your mind, you know, and you said that when it, you know, and someone walks by, they didn't see you. I, like, for whatever reason, like, my mind will key in, and it could be something even like my wife does, and it drives her nuts, you know, where I'll kind of like key in on something she does or says, and I'll go, well, that's kind of weird. Like that's an odd human behavior. I wonder what caused that, you know? And then I start spinning this tale in my head of, oh, maybe she had a bad day, or, you know, even something even more negative. It's always negative. You know, it's never like this like positive story that I tell myself. It's almost always this like negative tale, but yet all it was a comment, or all it was what somebody did. But you're right. It's like you hit it perfect there, at least how my mind works, is that you start telling these stories and then you start to believe them. You start to think that was the reality that happened because that's what you think. But really, like you said, the situation doesn't change. The situation was just someone walked down the street, you know. And that to me is kind of the essence, it seems, to live in the moment instead of telling a tale of something that didn't really happen, or, you know, inserting feelings or whatnot, even into emails that people get from each other or text messages, and they read it with emotion in it. And it's like, you can't do that. You know, you have to be more involved or engaged with the other side of what that person is, you know, because that's part of your story. But I think if you use that, you replace the person in this, and let's say, you know, it's FSHD or it's COVID. And, you know, like for me, I swear I've had COVID 500 times already. You know, I mean, I just sit there and think in my head, oh, I got an itchy throat. Oh, I got, oh, my nose is stuffy. I must have it. And then I drive my wife crazy. She goes, I'm not saying you do or don't, but just give it some more time and then decide. You know, it's like, I'm like the boy that cried wolf. So
there's Mark Twain quote. There's a Mark Twain quote that says, I've had many tragedies in my life, and some of them actually happened.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So why do we do that to ourselves? Or why do, more specifically, since I'm beating my own self up here, you know, why am I doing that?
Okay. So first of all, I'm reframing that. You're not beating yourself up. You're like being so brave and beautiful and sharing. When you say how your mind works, mm-hmm. I'm going to change that, how our minds work as human beings. Because everything you're saying, like, this is what it is to be human. What it is to be human is to develop narratives, stories about our lives. And this is really exactly, this is what I was saying before about how mindfulness practice is brain retraining. It's being able, so if you think, it's being able to notice the story without being a character in it. Mm. It's not that we stop the story necessarily, but it's whether or not we're living the story or it's something that we observe and see it. So I like to think about it. So, you know, our stories or our emotional reactions are like these waterfalls, and we can be in the waterfall and in the whole power of it crashing down into the water below, or we can step back from the waterfall and see it from behind it. And then maybe that waterfall, maybe we can sense the power in it. We could hear it. We could see it really clearly, but we are not lost in it and we are not taken by it. Hmm. Mindfulness practice is what kind of enables us to have that capacity. Hmm. And again, I really want to stress, this isn't 100% of the time. It's not about, you know, perfect, you know, I'm a Zen monk that, you know, can deal with everything. I've been through very difficult moments during this time as everybody else, but we practice because it's something that over time we can develop a different capacity to relate to the stories that are so ingrained in us in a different way and maybe not be taken with them. But I also wish to comment, you know, this question you said, well, why is it that I always look for the snake under the rock? Why is it that I'm always the... We're wired for this. Like our like Paleolithic brain, our reptilian brain, our fight or flight mechanism is wired towards threat. It is what has enabled us to survive, that we are oriented towards recognizing threats. Now, when we were cave people out in the bush, those threats were saber-toothed tigers and, other, you know, wildebeests, things like that. And what that response in the body is, that ability to tune into what a threat is, our pupils dilate so we can take in more information, our respiration goes up so that we can get more oxygen to our muscles so that we can either fight that saber-toothed tiger or run like hell. Mm-hmm. So our heart rate goes up, our digestion slows down, so the energy goes to the other places. This is our survival mechanism. Hmm. And this is ingrained. This is part of us. We all have this stress response. This is the fight or flight response, the stress response. The issue is that in modern times, we're not confronting saber-toothed tigers. So all of this hormonal response, all of this physiological arousal, we don't use it for what it's meant to do, which is fight or run. And we start having it in response to things like a diagnosis, mm-hmm. where there's no need to run or fight. Mm-hmm. So we have this flood of neurochemical changes, hormonal changes in the body that get our heart racing, get us sweating, and it doesn't go anywhere. And then we start interpreting it in all sorts of ways so that this physiological reaction all of a sudden becomes an emotional thing that we start thinking about and reliving over and over and over again, so that we keep this stress response going and it exhausts our body. And there's the second piece of it too, which I think is particularly challenging for those of us with FSHD, those of us with disabilities, that one of the number one best things that you can do to move this physiological reactivity through your body, use the stress response for what it is meant to be, is physical exercise. And it's challenging for us to do that.
Right.
You know, some more than others. And when I talk about physical exercise, I'm talking about like aerobic exercise where we're getting our heart rate up. So rather than fighting the saber-toothed tiger, you know, walking briskly or running or jumping, or it could be moving, you know, sitting in the chair and moving or bouncing or or something like that. But for many of us, that's really challenging. Screaming could help it too. That also can help move it through, screaming into a pillow, but doing something physical to move that stress response through us. So I guess that's what I really want to say, is that this is what we're wired for. And so it's not wrong that we focus on the threat. It is kind of what automatically happens. And for some of us more than others, because some of us have a more intense, you know, reactivity to stress than other people. And some of us have really good coping mechanisms. And maybe that coping mechanism, if you're able, is running and working it through. But there's so many other coping mechanisms. For me, it's drawing and painting. Through this entire time with of COVID, I have been drawing and painting almost every day. It has been my savior and my therapy. It's also meditative. I'm not thinking about things. I'm just immersed in that process. For some people, that's music. For some people, it's reading. For some people, it's playing with their dog or their cat or their kids or their grandkids. That we can have many ways that help us face the challenges in our life. Mindfulness practice, meditation, can lower our overall autonomic nervous system reactivity. So it takes a lot more before that stress response kicks in.
Yeah.
And that's the benefit of meditating regularly over time. But it's not wrong to have these reactions. It's really human and it's very universal. Your experience is unique to you, how you respond, just as mine is unique to me. But it is nothing more fundamentally human than to respond to threat with something that you're doing to protect yourself. But, you know, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like we have to take that energy and still use it some way, some form, some fashion, because I get it. I mean, that's like how we're wired.
Right.
So,
but we can retrain. We can retrain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the trick is knowing which way you're going to go with it or train yourself in it. You know, if it's exercise, et cetera. I mean, I guess sometimes I would say, you know, sometimes it's good to be distracted, you know, like you mentioned, talking about painting, talking about something to kind of put your mind somewhere else, where you're probably even doing what you do in that art without a ton of extra concentration, because it probably comes naturally for you, or it's something that flows out of you. And then when the distraction's done, time maybe has passed and you don't realize how long you were doing it. And that in that time, you know, weren't thinking about the things that were worrying you. I find that to be helpful too. You know, if I have a day, I almost dread a day where I don't have a ton going on. I need to be a little more distracted. That doesn't mean I have to be busy constantly, but I have to have some type of schedule of events and get my mind focused on positive things, or I'm just going to go right down the rabbit hole and not feel so great all day, or be quicker to be negative or jump down people's throats, you know, because I'm on edge on that particular day. It's not every day. You know, so because I find that, you know, if you do have something, you know, bothering you, that when you were distracted, if it is, like you said, with art or reading, for me, I'll find myself just either working on this podcast show or the big walk and roll event coming. That takes some good energy in a different direction Time passes. I feel satisfied. And I guess that's what I hope everyone has, that they have either art or some type of hobby or something they can do. Some people might even think it's even work, I suppose, right? If it like distracts them or makes them feel, you know, have like some type of worth. Which kind of leads me into this direction of this conversation a little bit. And that's, for some reason, and I know it doesn't totally maybe jump into understanding and living with the emotions, but it feels like it lingers into that being people's identity. You know, like FSHD, people say, I've heard people talk about if they've had a cancer diagnosis and they've battled it or are battling it or something else that they're taking on. And they'll say, I don't let it define me. Mm-hmm. And I always take a pause and I think to myself and I reflect that thought back to myself and say, am I letting this define me? But is that bad? So I guess that's kind of my question, because I think this actually does kind of define me a little bit. It's changed the definition of why I live. It's changed the definition of what I live for just a little bit. You know, it's added a little extra nugget of something, you know, because I mean, before this show, I had a podcast, but I shelved it. And I don't know if I ever was going to go back to it or not. I didn't disturb the room or the studio. I kind of left it be, almost like a child when they go off to college and you leave their room. That's kind of how this was. And it wasn't until I was diagnosed and I thought, man, I think I want to volunteer to do a podcast. So, you know, it's like, I think it kind of defines me. And people look at my social media accounts to be like, holy cow. You know, it's kind of littered with it. So is that a negative thing? Do you think that's an okay thing? What's your opinion?
So I'm going to do like the total like annoying therapist thing right here.
Good.
You know, it's not good or bad.
Okay.
You know, like, okay, so, you know, there's a lot of talk in FSH, like the FSHD circles about ACT therapy, acceptance and commitment therapy.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. You know, one of the sort of tenets of ACT is whether something is good or bad is very contextual. So it depends. I know that sounds really terrible. If FSHD as a self-definition is something that moves you farther away from something that's meaningful to you and purposeful to you, then it's problematic. But what you're talking about, at least how I'm hearing it, and this is a question for you, really, because I don't know if it's good or bad for you, but when I hear you and I see what you're doing with this experience of being diagnosed with FSHD, is that you're using it as an opportunity not only to educate other people and bring people together in this community. So it's doing something that's meaningful, that's purposeful, but it also, I'm sure, gives you a great sense of accomplishment. You know, you used the word before as distraction. And I was like, you know, it took everything for me to not say, stop it. Because it's more than distraction.
Yeah.
It's not just distraction. It's, you know, we can do things to distract ourselves. And yes, it can be very useful for short-term stressors to distract ourselves to get through it. But what you're talking about and what my art isn't, maybe it could be distracting if I need some distraction, but it really is, it's something that's meaningful to me. And when I create a piece and I look at it and it's something that brings me pleasure, or I give it to someone and it's a gift and somebody gets joy out of it, then I'm getting a sense of accomplishment from it. I get joy from it. I get a sense of purpose from it and meaning. And it's something that's meaningful to me. So it's moving me towards something that matters to me in my life. So I think that there's definitely the case that people get a diagnosis and they forget the wholeness of who they are as human beings because they're overwhelmed. And of course, you know, and how to have so much compassion.
Yeah.
But none of us are just our disease. Our disease is some one aspect of who we are. And for some of us, it's a very big aspect of, I won't even say who we are, of what it, if we look at our lives as like a pie chart, you know, There are some of us that FSHD is a tiny little sliver in terms of the attention it gets in our minds, our emotion, our bodies. That also might change over time. As people start with disease progression, then that little sliver that they had in their 20s may all of a sudden start growing as they're dealing with more things and they have to rethink things and becomes more of a present focus in their life. For some people, the level of distress about the uncertainty of their life, especially after their first diagnosis, and if they don't know anyone who's ever had it before, it's a really scary thing. I grew up in a family where all of my aunts and my father had it, and my grandfather likely had it too, although wasn't diagnosed. And my example were all of these people who lived very full lives, only they weren't, you know, doing great physical feats, but they worked and they had relationships and they traveled in the best way they can and still do. And it's like, so I had those models. So that it wasn't difficult. Absolutely. But it wasn't my whole pie. And then there's moments where you're going through something, you go through a disease progression, something that was easy for you a year ago, all of a sudden isn't so easy anymore. And then maybe go through this period where that's a little bit more a part of your pie.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily, you know, good or bad. It's whether or not how it is we spend our time and immersion into FSHD is something that brings meaning and purpose and accomplishment, some pleasure to our lives, learning, growth, and how much it's harmful and how much it's destructive. So we each need to look at that for ourselves.
Yeah, our friend here looks like Sue Drescher is plugging something on our behalf too in a way. She said, this is such a great discussion. We're going to talk more about this on Monday in our wellness session, which will focus on caregivers.
Yeah. Sue is so awesome. You know, she's she and her husband, Kent Drescher, is a psychologist as well. He does ACT work. He's just that whole family and his sister, you know, they're just such wonderful people. And they run the San Francisco chapter out there in California. Gosh, I hope you guys are safe with all of the fires and everything.
Yes.
Yeah. You love out there. But just wonderful people and great advocates for the FSHD Society and everything that they do.
You know,
I'm glad you do that, Sue. I want to hear about the wellness.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And I think that she has a nice, segue a little bit into this side of it. And that's the caregivers. And when you do talk about, or I'll always say family members, or if it's your significant other, spouse, etc. You know, a lot of times I have told people, you know, when my wife watches the small progressions or, you know, degressions, whatever you want to call it, with my body or the struggles I deal with, sometimes I feel like, you know, she's right in there too. Like almost as if she might as well have it, because I can sense she feels the struggle, and she's even worse in a way because she's like, I can't totally do anything for you. She's almost in a stuck pattern. So we're talking about understanding and living with emotions. You know, and we kind of viewed it from the FSHD side of it. How about the caregiver then? It's very important for those involved.
Absolutely. And Sue, thank you so much. Oh, I just pulled up my Facebook again because I turned it off because I was getting lots of beeps.
Yeah, right.
But I'm glad she says that they're safe, but the skies are orange, right? She's going to focus on caregivers. You know, In research on stress and stress management, being a caregiver for somebody who's sick is one of the highest stress, all these categories, you know, including death, divorce, you know, being a caregiver is very, very high stress. And everything that we're talking about about for people with FSHD is very relevant for caregivers as well. And it's not that people with FSHD should feel guilty about the stress that their caregivers. When you say it's almost like she's going through it too about your wife, she is.
Yeah.
She's going through her own experience of, you know, in this case, seeing your, you know, partner struggle with FSHD. It could be anything. I'm sure there are things that she goes through that are difficult, and it's hard to see the people that we love suffer. Mm-hmm. And absolutely. Then there's the additional physical demands on caregivers when their partners are less able to deal with things themselves, mm-hmm. and losses all along the way, you know, of things that we, you know, partners and friends and brothers and sisters and siblings might have done together, and then all of a sudden can't do it anymore. And, you know, this another part, another core principle in ACT, here we are again in ACT, is this idea of flexibility and cognitive flexibility. That when I'm stuck in, and I don't say this in a judgmental way, because of course we want things to stay the same. We want to be able to do all the things that we've always loved doing. But when we are stuck in the loss of what it is we're losing, it doesn't allow us to be flexible enough to create new ways of being together, new ways of connecting, new ways of finding purposeful and meaningful ways of spending time together. And we are stuck in loss. And that is such an incredibly normal thing to feel. I mean, of course we feel this way. And it really is a challenge for caregivers and the people that they're caring for. You know, do we actually talk about it? Do we have a dialogue about it? Is it okay to be frustrated with caregiving someday for caregivers, right? Mm-hmm. Is it okay for those being cared for to have frustrations too? Can we communicate it and accept the wholeness of the whole experience and also make sure that there are moments of pleasure in it all? Because there's a lot of stress to deal with, a lot of difficulty to deal with. And FSHD does not just happen to the patient. It happens to the whole family and all the people who love them. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thanks, Jennifer Eggert, joining us today. I hope everyone enjoyed our little conversation here. And we were talking about, you know, the understanding and kind of living with these emotions, and just a nice start to these conversations that I hope we have each month that you can bring to the table and kind of, you know, help people cope with this. How can people find out more about you or follow you, if it's social media or email, or is there a website?
Yeah, I have my website. Let me type it in the comments right now.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Good. Pretty plug. Simple. JenniferEggert.com. And if you want to see my artwork, you can see it at Jennifer Eggert Art on Instagram.
Nice.
And people are welcome to communicate with me. I have a contact, page on my webpage if they want to reach out to me and talk to me about things. You know, the other thing is that we have this working group right now with, four of us psychologists, all of us with FSHD, Kent Drescher, Sue's husband in California, Dave Younger, who is in Austin, Texas, and Aura Prilatensky, who is down in Florida. So there's four of us. We're very like-minded. We see things in similar ways, and we study mindfulness as well as other approaches to managing our own well-being and that of our patients and people in our lives. And so it'd be so great for you to get each of them on these Wednesdays, and because you'll get a lot of different perspectives, and perhaps we can and have different conversations. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, June is really spearheading more support from the emotional social side, and you'll be seeing more opportunities to communicate. I think we're having, I should have gotten this information, and I don't know if June is on right now. We'll have to get this information and share it. There's going to be an upcoming I think like Zoom meeting in September. I want to say it's September 14th. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I got the calendar up. It is. Okay, nice job, Jen. Nice job.
Yeah. I know. Look at that. Good plug.
Good plug. Yeah. That was awesome. Yeah. It is. It's looks like Wellness Hour virtual meeting, 5 p.m. Start. That's Eastern time for all of those. That's Monday, September 14th. Yeah. That's awesome. That's great.
And so the opportunity to talk, and there'll be breakout groups, I believe, for, you know, young people with FSHD, because there's really unique things when you're, you know, a young adult or a teenager that you're dealing with, versus older adults. And I'm not sure if there's going to be a caregiver breakout group, but there's going to be a number of different breakout groups so we can provide a little more support. These are the kinds of things that we did at the Patient Connect meeting, but that we weren't able to have this. Mm-hmm. Well, we did have online.
Yeah, right.
Had to bring that a little bit more into our lives.
Well, thanks again. And yeah, I'm going to reach out to the whole group. So look out, guys. I'm coming to get you. We're going to book as many different voices and different points of view, I suppose, yeah, for this segment. That's a fantastic idea. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tim. I always love talking to you. I'm happy to do this anytime.
You as well. Take care.
You be well. Bye.
So that is Jen Eggert helping us out. And really, I knew that there was others within that mindful group as we plugged it a little bit there, coming up on September 14th for that Wellness Hour and that kind of four-headed community that's going to help in that regard. And yes, I think that we definitely have to get all their voices heard. So I know we've started the email chains to kind of connect and get things going, and I will continue that, and we'll have different voices each week. Why not? That'd be a lot of fun. That'd be awesome. There's something I kind of wanted to add. There's something that kind of stuck out for me when Jen was talking, and I got a couple more. Hello from Atlanta. Hello, Atlanta chapter. They're watching now too. So thanks for being here. But there's something that kind of pointed, that kind of stuck out for me, and this was advice I heard from someone that I follow closely, kind of my positive mentor. And his name is John Gordon. He's never met me. I'd love to meet him someday. And he has a podcast, and he has other phenomenal books out, and I follow a lot of his work and what he has to say. A very realistic, positive type person. And I heard him say once, talk to yourself, don't listen to yourself. And when Jen was talking about, you know, telling our stories, and I kind of said that, you know, I would spin out this whole story. Well, that's in my head. And I'm listening to this story that I'm kind of playing out. But if I would talk it out loud, even though people might think you're crazy, right? But if you talk to yourself or encourage yourself, and that's really what that means. It means talk to yourself with encouragement. If you listen to yourself, usually your inner voice is doubt, or I can't do it, or there's 100 things that's going to stop me, and why bother starting? So if you talk your plan out loud, you talk to yourself and motivate yourself out loud, that voice you hear is your own to motivate you, to help you be more positive, and to work through whatever it is in front of you. And obviously reach out for support from friends. But I guess that's my little tidbit of a final advice on that segment is, you know, talk to yourself. Don't necessarily listen to yourself. Yeah, crazy. Thank you all for being here. Mark Stone has been watching too. Hey, Mark. And we have a huge event coming up, as you may have heard. The walk and roll event for FSHD Society is coming up this Saturday, just a couple days away, folks. And we've been meeting and gathering, and I know all the great walk leaders have been killing it out there, and chapter directors and people in the chapters helping out, getting their walks going and ready to go virtual. I'm excited. We're going to start airing it, I believe, at like 9 a.m. or something like that in the morning, and we're going to go 4 hours, and we're going to have coast-to-coast coverage of people walking in their areas, perhaps, and great guests. And one of the phenomenal guests will be Mark Stone to kick us off, as he's watching tonight, as well as the actor-director Max Adler. And I know there's a contest out. We can have a moment with Max. So we want you to learn more about that. You can do that all through FSHD Society.org. So that's the big walk and roll event coming. On the 14th, we talked about it. The Wellness Hour, 5 p.m. It starts Eastern. I'm probably going to tune into that. It's virtual. Why not? We can learn something. It kind of maybe piggybacks off what we were talking about today. And then there was another webinar scheduled on the 17th as well, a little bit of Q&A on muscular dystrophy with Catherine Wagner, I believe. So check all that out on the events page at fshdsociety.org. If there's any comments you want to share with me, thoughts, questions, ask me a question, you can do that anytime. fshdradio@fshdsociety.org is my email. And I really wanted to kind of share a little bit of my own self today, a little bit, kind of letting you know that, man, I deal with some crap too. There's no doubt. And I love talking with Jennifer Eggert, and I'm really going to enjoy talking to the other mindfulness emotional helpers that we're going to bring in each one of these episodes that kind of concentrate on that part of FSHD. Next week, we'll be concentrating on the physical side, where Bill and Mitch will join us again. We'll go over through some exercises. Here's a little nugget for that show. I talked to Mitch today, and he's actually putting a little exercise regime for me to do. And we're going to talk a little bit about that and how it's going to be going for me. So, yeah, I'm all in, folks. So I got a workout plan being designed as we speak. And he's going to talk about the program he's putting together for all of us that could help us with FSHD into the future when it comes to the physical side. So that's all coming up next week. Thanks again for being here. We will see you at the Walk and Roll on Saturday. Be there, and donate. Get the word out. Social media, splash it like crazy. Let's start breaking a financial record and meet that 2025 goal of getting treatments to all of us. Until Saturday, we will see you. Take care. You've been listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show.